Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we extract the most important insights from complex scientific sources.
Today, we are strapping in for a really fascinating ride.
We are. We're going into the world of organic materials, and specifically how energy and, you know, eventually charge actually moves through them.
For decades, these kinds of materials.
Yeah.
Things like organic semiconductors.
Right. The stuff you need for flexible screens, cheap solar cells, all that future tech.
Exactly. And they've all been facing this one fundamental roadblock.
They have these amazing properties, but getting energy to move through them is just incredibly slow.
Right.
So our mission today is to show you the massive technological shortcut that researchers have found. It involves blending light and matter, and it can turn a sluggish material into an absolute speed demon.
And that limitation is, it's absolutely fundamental. It comes down to the structure of these molecular systems.
Okay.
If you look at a traditional organic film, it's not some neat, perfect crystal. It's a messy, disordered landscape.
Right. So it's chaotic.
And because of that chaos, energy doesn't flow smoothly. It gets trapped almost instantly in these highly localized excitations. They're known as Frenkel excitants.
I'm picturing a Frenkel excitant as this little packet of energy trying to navigate a dark, confusing maze.
This is a perfect way to visualize it, yeah. Instead of flowing in a straight line, these excitants move exclusively via this short-range random hopping.
So it's basically a molecular game of bumper cars.
It is. And this makes the entire process incredibly inefficient, slow, and highly diffusive.
And the result of that for the technology is pretty bad.
It's catastrophic. The diffusion length, which is, you know, how far that energy can travel before it just dissipates, is typically limited to a mere 100 nanometers.
100 nanometers. I mean, that is truly microscopic. If we want flexible electronics on a large scale, we need that energy to go millimeters, maybe even centimeters.
For sure.
So how do you force this random localized packet of energy to suddenly start acting like a collective wave?
The solution is to create something called polaritons. This is where we stop thinking of the material as just, you know, pure matter, and we introduce a huge photonic component.
Photonic meaning light.
Light, exactly. Polaritons are these hybrid light-matter excitations. You form them when those sluggish molecular excitants are coherently coupled to resonant photons.
How do you do that?
Usually by placing the organic material inside some kind of reflective cavity.
So we've essentially taken that localized energy packet, the excitant, and married it to a wave of light.
That's the idea. And because the polariton is partly light, a photon, which is, you know, highly delocalized, its quantum wave function just instantly expands.
Over huge distances.
Over macroscopic distances, yeah. It introduces this long-range coherence into a system that was, at its heart, based on short-range chaos.
Mm-hmm.
The polariton doesn't have to hop from molecule to molecule anymore.
It just rides the wave of light.
It rides the wave by passing all that local disorder entirely.
This sounds, I mean, completely revolutionary, but it also leads to the core question we really need to answer in this deep dive.
Right.
What is the nature of this new enhanced transport? Is it still just a slow, random walk, but, you know, on a much longer leash?
Or is it something fundamentally new?
Exactly. Have we actually achieved something fast, directed, and ballistic, like light itself?
Well, when researchers first started doing this, the results were both promising and deeply confusing.
Okay.
We have to start with those initial attempts back around 2018. They were using TDBC J-aggregate molecules inside a metallic microcavity.
Reflective structure.
Right. And they confirmed the first part of the promise. They got long-range transport. They saw the first direct motion of polaritons in real time.
So they were actually watching the energy move.
They were watching it move successfully over several microns within just a few picoseconds. So the concept worked. The distance problem was, you know, cracked.
But this is where the results started causing some genuine head scratching in the physics community.
It is.
Because the theoretical models for the group velocity, I mean, how fast these light matter hybrids should move if everything is perfect, predicted incredibly fast movement.
Near light speed, really.
Yeah, we're talking expected velocities of around 25 to 26 micrometers per picosecond.
But when they actually measured the expansion velocity, the reality was drastically slower.
How much slower?
The observed speeds were only 0.2 to 0.4 micrometers per picosecond.
Wow. That's a A two-order of magnitude gap between what they expected and what they saw.
It's a huge gap.
That's like predicting a Hyperloop train and getting a bicycle.
Precisely. And that fundamental disconnect showed that the transport was not purely ballistic.
Something was still slowing it down.
It suggested that the chaotic reality of the organic film, you know, the static molecular disorder, was still winning the fight. The excitonic component.
The sluggish part of the hybrid.
Yeah, it was just too dominant. In some of their measurements, the energy was still up to 82% excitant, and that molecular sludge was just dragging the entire collective down.
So, okay, the first generation of Polaritons proved that distance was possible, but the speed was still limited by the material's own flaws. How did researchers redesign the system to finally beat that molecular disorder?
Well, they realized they needed a system that gave them a higher quality photonic environment, something that really increased the purity of the light component.
So a better cavity.
A much better cavity. They moved on from the earlier metallic ones, which had issues with absorption losses, to a new system using block surface wave Polaritons, or BSWPs. And these were housed in a purely dielectric, so an insulating structure.
Okay, what's the simple difference between the old metallic system and these BSWPs?
Think of the old metallic cavity as a slightly bumpy road with a lot of stop signs. It works, but it's lossy.
Right.
The BSWP structure, because it's purely dielectric, allows for much, much higher quality light confinement. This translates into something physicists call higher Q factors.
And in simple terms, a higher Q factor means?
In essence, they created a super clean, perfect optical highway for the Polaritons to travel on, which minimizes energy loss.
And what was the immediate result of giving them this cleaner highway?
The result was ultra-long propagation. They pushed the travel distance from just a few microns all the way to around 100 micrometers.
A massive jump.
But more importantly, this refinement led to the core breakthrough. The detailed mapping showed that the interplay between the disorder and the long-range light correlations, it leads to a fundamental mobility transition in how the transport works.
A mobility transition. Okay, let's make sure we ground this concept. For anyone listening, this is really the most crucial part of this whole deep dive.
It is.
We're talking about the moment that movement stops being random and starts being directed.
Exactly. And we can quantify this using something called a transport exponent. We'll call it beta. It describes how the size of the Polariton cloud grows over time.
Okay, so what are the key values for beta?
If beta equals 1, that means the system is in diffusive transport. The expansion is slow, it's proportional to the square root of time. That's our random walk.
The bumper cars.
The bumper cars. But if beta equals 2, that represents ballistic transport. The expansion happens at a constant linear velocity.
That's the ideal state. The fast, directed laser beam on that perfect highway.
That's it. The mobility transition is the moment the system flips from that chaotic, slow spread to the fast, directed flow.
And the immediate impact of pulling this off, I mean, looking at the raw numbers, this is truly a mind-blowing insight moment.
It absolutely is. Let's compare the new BSWP results to those bare excitons we started with.
Okay.
Bare excitons have ridiculously low diffusion coefficients. We're talking like 10^3 vols down to 1077 square micrometers per picosecond. Just incredibly slow.
Almost not moving at all.
Practically. But with strong coupling in this new system, they saw diffusion coefficients reaching 284 square micrometers per picosecond.
Wait, say that again? From 10^7 to $284.
It's a 6 orders of magnitude enhancement.
A millionfold enhancement in the efficiency of energy movement.
A millionfold. You've gone from energy barely moving 100 nanometers to easily reaching 100 micrometers, all while dramatically boosting its speed potential.
That is just staggering.
That massive enhancement proves that strong coupling fundamentally overrides that molecular disorder. It removes the main bottleneck, letting the energy bypass the need to ever hop between molecules.
So once they understood the dynamics, the sources say the real genius was realizing this whole mobility transition could be controlled.
Yes.
They basically created a dial to choose whether the transport would be slow or fast. What is that dial?
That dial is the photonic weight. Specifically, it's the square of the photonic fraction, which we can write as alpha 2.
And that's just the ratio of light to matter in the Polariton.
It's as simple as that. How much of it is light, how much of it is matter. And by adjusting things, like the distance between the mirrors or the concentration of the organic material, they could tune this ratio.
So they created a clear instruction manual.
A very clear one. And here it is. When the excitonic component is still large, let's say the photonic weight is around 50%.
So half light, half matter.
Right. In that case, the transport is still overwhelmingly diffusive. Beta is approximately 1. the molecular disorder still dominates.
But the distance is at least better.
The distance is enhanced to the micron scale, which is still a big win.
Okay, so that's phase one. Let's call it enhanced slowness. When did they hit true speed?
That happened when they pushed that photonic component high. Specifically, when the photonic weight went above 0.7, so 70% light.
The script just flipped.
It flipped completely. This is phase three, the jackpot. The transport becomes purely ballistic. Beta is now approximately 2.
And at that point, the light is just so dominant, it completely overcomes the disorder.
The long-range coherence provided by the light fully overwhelms the inherent molecular mess.
And the most compelling proof of this control came from those intermediate cases, right?
Yeah.
Where the dial was set somewhere between, say, 60 and 70% light.
Yes, exactly.
What did the transport look like then?
The log-log plots they made gave this crystal clear evidence of a crossover. The expansion was initially purely ballistic. Beta was about 2. So it started out at high speed. But after a very short period, we're talking around 0.3 picoseconds. It ran out of steam. And the expansion became diffusive again. Beta dropped to 1.
Wow. So that transition is the ultimate proof of this mixed nature? You're watching the exact moment where the photonic part loses its dominance and the molecular disorder grabs control again through scattering.
Precisely. And microscopically, the consequences are just enormous. Strong coupling dramatically increased the mean free path.
Which is the average distance the energy travels before it. Well, before it crashes into something and scatters.
Right. And this path reached values on the order of tens of micrometers.
So just think about that scale for a second. The energy is traveling these collective distances that are 4 orders of magnitude larger than the space between molecules.
And it's effectively ignoring thousands of individual molecules along its path.
Okay, so now let's talk about the absolute speed limit. What happened when they cranked the dial all the way up?
The maximum they tested was a photonic weight of 0.82, so 82% light.
And what kind of velocity did they see?
At that high photonic weight, the observed velocity reached 176 micrometers per picosecond.
That figure is just astounding.
It is, because that is 2/3 the speed of light in a vacuum.
Let that sink in. 2/3 the speed of light.
And this was purely ballistic propagation happening over macroscopic distances of up to 100 micrometers.
We were talking about converting chaotic, sluggish, nanoscale energy transfer into near light speed directional flow.
And doing it with organic materials at room temperature.
That is truly remarkable, especially when you remember we're dealing with messy organic molecules, not, you know, perfect crystalline silicon.
However, there is a crucial detail that remains.
Okay.
Even in that purely ballistic regime where the photonic weight was super high, the observed velocity still remains slightly lower than the theoretical group velocity, the VUG.
So even at its fastest, it wasn't quite reaching its theoretical max speed.
Nope. Which confirms that while they can drastically minimize the effect of disorder, they can't completely eliminate it. Not yet.
So why the slight speed reduction, even when it's 82% light? What's causing that little bit of drag?
Well, the sources suggest this reduction is due to thermally activated scattering and energy redistribution.
It's all heat.
Essentially, yes. Even this highly coherent waves can experience intermittent trapping. And this trapping likely involves what is sometimes called the dark manifold.
The dark manifold. That sounds ominous.
Yeah.
Is that just those Frankel excitons that momentarily decouple from the main light wave?
In a sense, yes. It's thought to be this collection of localized states that still hold excitonic energy.
Okay.
So when the polaritons scatter from thermal energy, they can get briefly trapped in one of these long-lived localized states. And even if it's just for a moment, that reduces the effective velocity of the whole process.
I see. So it's like the train is moving at full speed, but it makes a few very brief, unscheduled stops.
That's a great analogy. And a simple kinetic model based on the scattering actually reproduces the experimental trends beautifully. It shows that this slight drag is predictable.
So if we zoom out, what does this all mean for you, the person who actually wants to use these fast, efficient devices?
Well, the core insight is that researchers have established a physical, engineerable link between the composition of the material and its transport mode.
We have 3 distinct phases now.
Exactly. We've defined 3 controlled phases. First, you have greatly enhanced diffusion. That's useful for just increasing the range of existing devices.
Phase one.
Second, there's that dynamic crossover region where the speed depends on time and composition. And finally, phase 3, purely ballistic flow.
Where the energy propagation is limited only by fundamental absorption, not by the material's underlying molecular mass.
Right.
This ability to just tune the light matter composition, to shift from random hopping to ballistic acceleration, that seems to be the central tool for future organic electronics.
I think so. I mean, we're talking about creating organic optoelectronic devices with superior conductivity.
Which would make solar cells vastly more efficient, right? By making sure every packet of energy actually reaches the electrode, instead of scattering away as heat.
Absolutely. And we're also talking about active photonic devices that rely on this ultra-fast response, like optical switches or maybe even future quantum computing components.
So the speed limit is no longer the molecule.
The speed limit is now the percentage of light we can successfully integrate.
We've really completed an incredible journey today. We went from energy barely moving 100 nanometers, trapped in the molecular chaos of organic films,
all the way to achieving stable, directed ballistic flow over 100 micrometers, moving at 2/3 the speed of light.
And it was all thanks to strategically blending matter with light.
The takeaway for you really is that the future of material science often lies not in inventing entirely new molecules, but in learning how to manage the chaotic behavior of the ones we already have.
It's that competition between the molecular scale disorder and the long-range coherence that dictates whether energy crawls or races.
That's the whole story.
And that leaves us with a final, provocative thought for you to mull over. We've established that even the fastest ballistic transport they observed is still slightly influenced by this residual disorder, preventing it from reaching the theoretical maximum speed.
Right. That little bit of drag is still there.
So what specific experimental or theoretical mechanisms could researchers explore next to completely stabilize that polariton wave, to eliminate the effects of the underlying molecular structure, and pave the way for truly perfect room temperature photonic conductivity?
A fascinating question.
That's all the time we have for this deep dive. We hope you feel thoroughly well informed.